Hello and welcome to the Frugalpreneur podcast for people who want big venture for little capital. I'm your hostess, Shannon, and on today's podcast, we'll be interviewing the creator of ConsumerismCommentary.com, Flexo, aka Luke, originally created Consumerism Commentary as a blog to keep himself accountable with his personal finances. But over time, this little blog has evolved into a real community, a podcast, and even a business. He has some excellent insight on how you can monetize your blog, build a community, and really some of the great unanticipated outcomes that can come from building a really great blog like Consumerism Commentary. I think his story will really motivate and inspire you, and I really enjoyed getting him on the phone. So, without further ado, the creator of Consumerism Commentary, Flexo. All right, so today we have Flexo, aka Luke, from Consumerism Commentary on the call with us today. Thank you.
Thank you, Shannon.
And welcome to the show. We are so happy to have you on the Frugalpreneur podcast. And
I'm excited to be here.
Oh, that's great. And for anyone that doesn't know who you are or what you do, could you tell us a bit about yourself and the blog you run? And
sure.
How you got started with that.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, I've been going by the name Flexo since I started Consumerism Commentary. And it's a blog that I started back in 2003. And I created it with only one purpose. And it was kind of a selfish purpose, just to keep myself focused on my finances. Because until that point, until perhaps a couple of years before starting the site, my finances were a mess. And I was a longtime blogger, a longtime web designer. By that point, I figured that starting a blog, a new blog for me, just to focus on my personal finances, where I could put up this report every month to show the progress, mainly for myself, but if anyone happened to read, it would be great too, but mainly for myself so that I can keep myself focused on the decisions that I make every day and how they affect my finances.
Awesome. So really, starting a blog for you was just simply a way to tell the world about what you were about, manage your finances, and really gain some accountability. And I think that's one great reason why so many of us love blogging is because it helps us reach our goals. And so over time now, how long have you been blogging?
Well, I've been blogging on Consumerism Commentary since 2003. So that's almost 9 years now. But before that, I was blogging on different sites. I had several personal sites, and I actually started what you might consider a blog back in 1994 when I was in college. Of course, the blogger didn't exist back then. No one used the word blog. But the website was basically what you would call a blog today. It was an online journal of things that I felt like writing about, and it was updated as frequently as I could focus on it back then. And it was just of a personal nature.
Awesome. And for those of our listeners out there that want to start a blog, do you have any tips and things that you've picked up on over the years for anyone that's new starting out? Any insights you've had on really how to do a blog successfully? And I know everyone listening defines success a bit differently. Some people want simply to blog for the accountability of whatever their goal is, to lose weight, to get their, finances on track. But others really want to build a blog that has reach and that really spreads their message and their vision. So do you have any tips and advice on how to really get started in blogging successfully and growing your reach?
Well, you're exactly right when you say that everyone has a different definition of success. I think if you want to start a blog that is more than just a personal journal, something that you want to present to the world as yourself, and whether it's to grow your personal brand, if you're looking to move forward in your career, whether it's to achieve some kind of personal goal, I think what you need to do is start with a mission for the site. And the mission can just be one or two sentences long. It just says very concisely, this is why this site exists. This is what I'm doing, and everything. And then you can take that mission, and then everything you do from then on should tie into that mission somehow. I wouldn't worry so much about the specifics when you're just starting out, because these are things that you kind of discover as you go along. So I would just start with a broad idea of what you want to do and why you want to do it, and then think about what you need to do in order for that to happen.
Very cool. And so with a mission, did you find that yours evolved over time, or do you think that you still kind of have the same tone, the same ideas as you did when you started out?
Well, no, the mission has certainly changed over time. So when I started Consumerism Commentary, you know, like I said, I was just kind of starting to keep myself accountable for my own finances, which is good. And, you know, that kept me, you know, I felt no problem working several hours a week on the site with that sort of mission. Over time, though, it turned out that this site could become a business. And although I didn't really want to look at it as a business so much, I wanted it to be a hobby. I wanted to enjoy it and not have to think of it as work. Because I found that, you know, I was just enjoying writing so much that I would spend almost all of my time outside of work, outside of sleep, and outside of, you know, social activities, writing on it. And, you know, I didn't want that to change when it became a business. So I was very focused on finding the right balance for me. But what I found was that the mission changed over time. So what I've kind of said is, you know, the original purpose of the site was to hold myself accountable for my finances. But now the mission has changed to be more of a general idea where, you know, I'd like to help people succeed and find their own definition of success for their own finances.
Awesome. And so I was just going to ask a question about your transition from kind of just a blog, like a personal accountability model, into a business. And I know that many bloggers, especially as they start to pick up steam, have questions about monetizing. You know, should they put AdSense on their site? Should they take sponsorships of any kind? Do you have any thoughts on monetization, specifically making that decision as when it's right, or, you know, what works for you? Do you have any just thoughts on that?
Sure. You know, back 10 years ago, it was, or maybe 12 to 15 years ago, it was unthinkable to monetize a blog. That just never happened. You know, a lot of the people who were blogging at the time were kind of tech geeks. Eventually, blogs became very political with the 2000 elections. And that's when people started thinking about monetization. And it still wasn't very much in the mainstream. People who had ads on personal sites were not really respected as much as people who, you know, were staying out of making their blogs businesses at the time. But the environment has changed so much since then. Basically, you know, blogs have become a way for people to earn money on the side, and it's accepted now. It's part of the zeitgeist of the internet today. And for me, that started in 2004 when I decided, okay, I'll throw AdSense ads on the blog and see what happens. A lot of other political websites were doing it at around the same time. I thought, well, let's try this in finance and see what happens. And it took a while, but the site started generating an income. And, you know, I realized, there's something here. I mean, I can actually now justify all the time that I'm spending writing by saying, well, it's earning me some money, so it can't be all that bad. But, you know, a lot of people still have problems with the idea of accepting money for creating something that's supposed to help people. And, you know, it comes down to whether you want to monetize and how you want to monetize is going to be based on what you're comfortable with. If you're comfortable with selling products that you create, then you can do that. If you're comfortable with affiliate type of relationships, then you can you have a website that's based on affiliate sales. There are so many different ways to do it nowadays that there's anyone who wants to try to earn money with a blog can certainly have enough opportunities to do so.
Yeah, and could you give us a little bit more insight on monetization? Because I know you've added AdSense and things like that, but has blogging led to any other opportunities? of that kind other than AdSense? Because you said people can create products, which is great. They can do affiliate sales. What's come your way and what's worked best for you?
Well, for me, some of the opportunities that have opened up due to the site have been, you know, my ability to communicate on a certain level with people I respect in the industry, like financial writers and columnists, as well as major companies. I mean, through Consumerism Commentary, I've had a chance to consult or provide my feedback on financial products that end up being delivered to the public at large. And that's pretty exciting to have some kind of feedback and say on the on how some of these financial products are designed. And of course, as your listeners may know, Consumerism Commentary was recently sold to a larger company. So there's always the opportunity down the road for someone to notice the work that you've been doing and appreciate it so much that they're willing to partner with you in that kind of relationship.
That is awesome. Cause I think there are plenty of us out there that just see a blog in maybe a 6 month time frame that we just see that we're going to post 3 articles a week for the next 6 months and see where it goes. But there really are opportunities to leverage the success you have on a blog, either for sale or to get writing gigs with major publications or to offer feedback on existing institutions in your niche. I think that I've seen many people being able to leverage their blogs, even, you know, to add on their resume if they're comfortable with that, to get jobs in social media and PR, which is pretty cool. But, you know, beyond the actual the business side of Consumerism Commentary, what's been your favorite part of blogging? You know, the intangibles, the other stuff. What's the fuzzy feeling you get from it?
Oh, well, I just like receiving feedback from readers, whether it's, you know, how they may have discovered something about themselves through Consumerism Commentary, or the site has, you know, helped them communicate with people who are in the same situation as them and they've learned something, or even feedback that kind of where people come back to me and say, this is really something to think about. You know, thanks for bringing up this issue or putting something in a light that's not frequently heard. That gets me a little excited, I guess. And of course, getting to know people who are of the same mindset as me, other financial bloggers, other columnists, and other writers who are really passionate about money management and these things that most people think are boring, but are really exciting to talk about, especially when there's a lot of innovation going on in the space.
Yeah, it's definitely something to think about, that the blogosphere is constantly changing, especially as more and more people get into the game. But speaking of that, you know, now that it is changing so rapidly, some of the things that you encountered early on in your blogging career aren't really an issue now. Like we talked about AdSense being kind of more mainstream and acceptable now. What are some of the changes you see happening in the blogosphere? And do you have any advice for our listeners that probably want to stand out and get recognized and really define themselves in blogging?
Well, yeah, that's a great question. Going back to 2003, when I started Consumerism Commentary, there were no other personal finance blogs around. It was an opportunity that in this space doesn't exist anymore to really make a name for yourself early on and get noticed by major media, just a couple of months into your existence, because no one else, very few people were out there doing this at the same time. The question is, what is the world going to look like now that instead of there being 20 personal finance blogs, there are 2,000, 3,000 personal finance blogs, all kind of competing for the same advertisers or mostly the same advertisers and the same revenue and the same search terms and everything else that you have to think of from the business of blogging? And what I'm concerned about now is I think that blogs as we've known them are probably, you know, at their peak. And so what I'm trying to do is look forward to the next thing and trying to figure out what it is, whether it's going to be mobile or something social. And, you know, I have to decide whether I want to be there personally in this space competing to get get attention in a crowded field that just keeps getting more and more populous. I think that's a big concern for people who are starting out now is to really understand what they're up against as far as competition in terms of getting attention, the type of attention that you need in order to build a good audience. And a lot of great bloggers have gotten past that barrier. There are some of the best personal finance blogs have started in the last year. And they've certainly made a statement and made an impact by doing what they need to do to show how unique they are and what they can bring to the table. And I think that's what people need to do to set themselves apart in a field that's so crowded now. So even if it's not in personal finance, you have to look at the community that's out there, the community of people that you'll be dealing with and you'll be competing with and you'll be working with, and get to know exactly, you know, what your role could be in that community and work with people to make a name for yourself there.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. And I think your advice speaks a lot about longevity, which can be a serious asset. Many of us are so intimidated by those bloggers that have launched recently and are able to hit, you know, thousands of hits a day, you know, generating tons in affiliate sales. And it's so intimidating to see the few that have launched in the last year and suddenly make it really big, really fast. But the majority of bloggers never do that. And so for any of my listeners out there that are intimidated, if you can make it past the first 6 months, even though there is still a brick ton of competition out there, I think it speaks enough that if you stick around and you're committed, that many of your colleagues that started around the same time will probably fall off the face of the planet and just don't have the grit to stick around. Because it is hard to stand out in such an oversaturated blogging community at this point. But if you stick with it, I think there's something to be gained from it. And I think everyone has to make that choice as to whether what they're offering is truly beneficial to the community and if they feel that it's been reciprocated in a way that makes it worth their while. So even though it's a little different, I think now, I think if you bring something unique to the table, I think that's definitely a good way to do that. And you at Consumerism Commentary have definitely done that because you guys have a lot of great content. You also have a podcast and you seem to have a really strong community. And do you have any advice for community building or did it kind of just grow holistically?
Well, for me, it did kind of grow holistically. I've always been, I've been a strong advocate of online communities, even back as early as 1990, when I had my own personal bulletin board service with a dial-up modem. People would, you know, turn on their computers, log onto their modems. They'd dial my, you know, the second phone number in my house, and they'd connect with a bulletin board and leave messages for each other. And it was an interesting way to build a community online before people had the internet. This was a long time ago. You know, that kind of, it kind of, you know, that whole theory kind of stayed with me throughout college. And, you know, I was always trying to find ways to build online communities. And, yeah, I think as far as, what people can do in order to build that is really get involved with the people who respond to what you're doing. And, but the key to all of this is being passionate about it. One thing I found is that people just, you know, I tend to be very passionate about the things that I like, and people just seem to follow that. You know, whatever I get involved in, and I talk about it a lot, I try to get people involved, and you know, people join my team, and it's so exciting, and you know, we're all in this boat together, and we're all you know, communicating with each other, and if this kind of thing, you know, gets you excited, then, you know, community building is going to come naturally.
And so for those of us that maybe aren't so great at community building, do you have any advice for really building a strong following if that doesn't come naturally? Stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm an introverted person. If you were to look at my Myers-Briggs profile, I fall on the introverted side. What that means is that spending a lot of time with other people is exciting for me, but it's also draining. So I think, you know, you have to look at your personality and whether you can how you work with other people and figure out ways to make it exciting for you so that you can effectively lead people. And it comes down to finding out how to be a leader, how to work with other people, and how to get other people excited about things. And for someone who doesn't have any experience with that, one thing you probably just want to do is start by communicating and talking to a lot of people. And for someone like me who's introverted, that can be very difficult. I do have a difficult time just walking up to someone and striking up a conversation, but it all comes down to getting past that and putting yourself out there. And, you know, people are happy to talk and happy to become friends. You just need to talk to them.
It's so funny you say that you're an introvert, because you actually coordinated the Plutus Awards at the Financial Blogger Conference last year. And mm-hmm. I totally did not get that vibe that you were an introvert from last year. So that's interesting. I think, you know, knowing that anyone can find something that works for them. And it's really about establishing a system and utilizing the strengths you have instead of going, oh, well, I'm not, like in our social circles, like, oh, I'm not like J Money. I could never be as boisterous and outgoing as him, or I'm not JD Roth. I'm not this or that, but really leverage who you are and your personality type to make it work for you, and your community will build around that instead of pretending to be somebody you're not or forcing yourself into an uncomfortable situation. I always ask this about everyone I bring on the podcast. Do you have any favorite books or resources that have really helped you in your blogging journey?
That's a good question. When I started blogging, there were no books about blogging. I did what came natural to me. It didn't come from learning anything. I even when back in 1994, when I was just getting introduced to the World Wide Web, which was pretty new at the time, at least for college students like me, I guess that there were some people out there who had probably been working with the World Wide Web for a couple of years at that point, but just an isolated group of people. But there were no books teaching you how to learn HTML. You just kind of had to put yourself out there and figure things out for yourself. There are no books that helped me blog. There are no the only thing that I would really say is very specific to personal finance is the books that I've really liked that have kind of guided my philosophy for dealing with my own finances. And, primarily that wasn't even in the form of a book. It was in the form of the forums on The Motley Fool back in, 1999 and 2000. I think I learned a lot from the communities there as far as how to live below your means and how to think about your finances and how to move forward. And just, reading, and I didn't even participate a lot. Mostly I was just reading. And what I learned from there, I was able to take back to my own finances much more than most of the other books that I've read since then. And I've read quite a bit, especially to, because it's part of what I do now. I want to stay on top of the latest books. There was one personal finance book that really stood out to me over the last few years since I started Consumerism Commentary, and that was The Number by Lee Eisenberg. And I like that book a lot because it didn't talk down. It didn't condescend to the reader at all. And most personal finance books, most self-help books do that. Most of these books are written they're written, so that a fourth grader could understand them, and which is great for fourth graders. But I want to read a book that challenges me. So finding books that fit that description, whether it's about finance or about business, I don't read any business books. I hate them all.
Well, that's encouraging for people that hate business books.
Yeah.
I'm totally a book nerd. I read so many books, and you know, it's also related to the fact that I started blogging a little over a year ago, now that there are a ton of books out there. But I was the type that would oversaturate myself with every stupid book I could find on, because Frugal Beautiful started out as a frugality and financial blog. It really isn't much of that anymore, God help me, but you know, I went the opposite direction where I found way too much stuff out there and started getting overwhelmed with all the crap I should be doing instead of just doing it and enjoying the journey and kind of learning as I go. But I think those are good suggestions. I think maybe not having to head to the library or totally wipe out Amazon's, you know, bookshelves, but instead of doing that, just go to a forum and start talking to other people who do what you want to do, whether they're bloggers or not, and just make those connections, see what they have to say, and keep up to date on news that's happening around your topic. That's really a great way to get involved and start pinning yourself as an expert and learning as you go. So I always ask about books because I'm kind of a book nerd, but there's, you know, two ways to skin a cat, even though I hate that phrase.
And well, so, you know, it's the reason there are so many books now is because the space has gotten a lot more complicated than it was 10 years ago. A lot more. In order to be successful at a certain level these days, you do have to kind of have a very strong knowledge about search engine optimization, unfortunately. You know, and these are things that do not come naturally to most people. Mm-mm. So you need to find a way to make it work for you. And that's going to either come from, you know, from reading and studying and learning how to handle these advanced techniques for your online business now, or finding someone to really guide you through it.
Oh yeah, amen to that last point, because I have tried to teach myself SEO and found that I started hating everything, not just SEO, but my blog entirely. So I'm finally getting to the point where I'm not going to be as frugal as I used to be and simply hire somebody. Get to that point, because you can find people that are affordable to do your web design, to do your search engine optimization. You probably don't want to hire anyone to do your content for you, but you definitely want to find somebody, even a friend that's, you know, will do it for cheap. Just to make sure that you don't end up loathing your blog more than you have to.
And with your blog is you. You are your blog. I think you're exactly right to say that you don't want to outsource your content too much. You know, again, it depends on what you're trying to do. If someone wants to create a website that has tons of content right away, immediately, and, you know, try to build off of that kind of volume, then then the website doesn't have a personality, but they're not trying to have a personality. So that's fine for them. But I think if you're in this for the long term and you want to create a successful business based on a blog, it has to reflect your personality, and your personality has to be something that other people are going to be interested in.
Oh, that's the hard part right there. Right. You have to be an interesting person. So you can't spend all your time in front of the laptop. You kind of have to have a life too.
Yeah, that's point taken. I'm trying to do that too. I don't have much of a life these days, but I'm trying.
I know, right? Seriously, ever since I started this podcast, it's been like, oh, sunshine, what's that? But then again, this is Chicago in winter, so I'm not missing much out there. So I think that would just about wrap it up. Before we go, I have to ask you a totally nerdy question. If you could pick one doctor from Doctor Who, who is your absolute favorite?
I knew it was going to be a Doctor Who question.
Who would be your favorite doctor?
Well, you know, I have to go with Tom Baker, number four. He's, you know, he wasn't the first doctor that I had ever seen growing up. Cause I've watched Doctor Who since I was 5 years old. At least, probably longer than that, but I don't remember. My younger brother, who's 5 years younger than me, one of his first words was Doctor Who. He pointed at the TV screen as a baby and said, "Ha who, ha who!" Whenever he saw the opening credits, at least according to my mom, I don't remember any of this, but that's what she says. So I've been watching this show for a long time, and I'd have to say that number four, Tom Baker, you know, with his, he's just so goofy and fun and, great sense of humor and, an interesting, style. I just liked it.
Nice. Wonderful. Well, I'm so glad I asked you. I'm kind of partial to David Tennant myself, but I just always, whenever I have the opportunity to ask somebody a totally nerdy question, because I can't with everybody, but with you, I know I was safe to do that.
Definitely.
I just totally had to do that. Well, Flexo, thank you so much for being on our podcast today. Are you going to be at the Financial Blogger Conference this year?
Yes, I'm registered, and I'll be doing the Plutus Awards again this year, hopefully with a nice team to make this even a better event this year than last year.
Oh, dig it, dig it. I will be sending you my bribe money shortly, so expect a check from me.
Cool.
And the podcast, and I'll be sending over maybe some Doctor Who stuff to bribe you with, you know, because that's totally legit. But thanks again for being on the podcast, and for anyone listening, check out his wonderful site at consumerismcommentary.com. And Flexo, you have an awesome day.
Thanks so much, Shannon.
All right. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okie dokie. So that wraps up episode 5 of the Frugalpreneur podcast. Huge high fives and tons of thanks to Flexo for coming on the show today. And to my amazing listeners out there, you guys are awesome. Thank you so much for subscribing in iTunes, giving me a positive rating. And if you have any ideas for the podcast, a topic you want me to cover, an entrepreneur you want me to interview, please let me know by logging on to thefrugalpreneur.com. That's the blog. And leave me a comment or you'll see my contact form on there. So let me know. I want to hear from you. Also, if you think of a better transition than the phrase, without further ado, that I could use on my podcast, that would be tremendously helpful. Because I realized as I've been editing this podcast that there is further ado. So I'll say my intro, talk about the interviewee, and then I'll say without further ado, and then run the intro music. And so that technically is like a minute of further ado. So I need to think of something clever, and I totally thank you for your patience with me as I figure this out. And I'll see you back at the blog, thefrugalpreneur.com. And thanks again for tuning in. Have an awesome week.